Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 21st of March, and I'm recording at 20:25. That's 8:25, and that's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes, but first let's just have a quick look at what's been taking place here recently. Well, starting with stock markets, it's been very much of a mixed picture, hasn't it? I mean, I'll mention those ASEAN indices, which have had difficulties since peaking last May. And you remember last May when we looked at those and talked about those, and they had surged way above their 200-day moving averages, and they had really been the bull market leaders from the 208 lows, leading Wall Street to the upside by four or five months. And they're still ranging, albeit beneath their highs. Yes, they're still ranging beneath their highs, but well above the lows that they had seen late last year, and also in January of this year. Now, elsewhere in Asia, Japan had been one of the darlings last year, particularly in the first half of the year, and we know why. Shinzo Abe's big reflationary effort and the devaluation that was taking place in the Japanese yen. But it's had a miserable performance here so far this year. It's still within that very big ranging pattern that we have seen since it first became overextended in the latter part of last year's trading. And the concerns, well, there's the VAT hike that is coming, or at least Shinzo Abe says it's coming, although it's quite controversial. And there is also the fact that Japan's energy problems are certainly a significant headwind because of the closure of all the nuclear reactors. As you know, Shinzo Abe would like to restart those, but there's plenty of opposition, certainly among the public opinion polls, or over 65% at least negative in terms of reopening those plants. I think they're going to have to do that eventually, and they're spending a lot of money to reinforce them, huge walls and so on, in the coastal regions. That's a concern. And then the yen hasn't benefited much recently. People were talking about the yen moving up towards 100, or moving down, I should say. So in dollar terms, that the dollar would gain to 110 to 120 yen. But of course, the dollar has been quite weak over the last couple of months. Although I think on a longer term basis, we do feel that the dollar will become somewhat stronger. But it's still got that big tailwind in terms of monetary policy, despite the tapering. There's still, what, $55 billion a month going in there, and although that's going to be knocked back steadily, the interest rates are going to stay low for at least another 6 months after the tapering ends, according to Janet Yellen, as you've probably seen. And the U.S. is not trying to push the dollar up in here. So, and for Japan, that's created a bit of a headwind. I think it's going to go on ranging for a little longer, and we need to get beyond this VAT and see what happens there. That's asking some questions, creating some uncertainty, causing some moves out of Japan. On a longer term basis, I'm quite optimistic, but there are too many uncertainties, and you know, in a global beauty contest, if you got lots of uncertainties, then people look somewhere else. Getting back to, looking at some of the other Asian markets, China. So much bad news coming out of China. Although that said, it was up 2.75% here today on that Shanghai Composite Index. So I think the government is concerned about stemming the decline. It wants to stem the decline for that index because Chinese investors rather have been pulling out, and the valuations are low though. So and some sectors have continued to perform. But those sectors that have performed have been almost entirely related to public consumption. Healthcare, for instance, has done extremely well still. Now, China's weakness also costs a lot of uncertainty over the entire Asian region. China has cut back on its requirements for commodities, and that has hit a number of those ASEAN indices. It's also hit the resources producers, particularly the South American resources producers, in a big way. It's weakened Canada's currency, even among the developing markets. It's weakened the Russian markets, though that's got plenty of problems, which I'll come to in a moment. So again, an uncertain and somewhat turbulent period in here overall. Now, I don't think I can fall off the sofa in surprise over this because we have had that severe credit crisis recession, and I've said it a couple of hundred times, I'm sure, but that's worth repeating in the sense, very briefly, it takes at least 5 to 7 years to get back to anything approaching normal GDP growth. And because this was a widespread credit crisis recession, we can assume that it takes a bit longer than that. And we are moving in the right direction. Let's move on to Europe, thanks to Super Mario Draghi at the ECB. We've seen an improvement in the entire European situation. It's got a long way to go, the European markets actually have certainly been one of the outperformers this year and in the fourth quarter of last year. And that outperformance actually continues. So Japan's the only one of the markets that's still got quite a big financial tailwind here in the form of monetary policy that is currently not performing overall. So Europe, is it going to go on improving? Well, it's got a headwind that has arisen, and that's in the Russian situation, which I mentioned a moment ago. And I'll repeat my point. I wouldn't touch the Russian stock market because I keep getting asked about that because, yeah, it's cheap. It's usually cheap. But this is a rigged market. It's kind of a milch cow for Putin and his cronies here overall. You can do a lot better elsewhere without taking much in the way of the risks. Where might that be? And I'm going to backtrack here again quickly. Vietnam is looking very, very good. Had a downside key day reversal 2 days ago. So it was overextended in the short term, so we'll see some consolidation up here. But most of the problems that are affecting other regions of Asia are having less impact on Vietnam, and the technical pattern is really one of the best in terms of recovery potential. So that's high on my list. And I also think Japan will make another run to the upside here later this year. And I also think China is a medium-term recovery candidate, but I've been saying that for a while, and it hasn't really happened yet, except for the consumer stocks that I mentioned earlier on. So Europe's slow but steady progress, but hit by this sanctions effort now. People are a little bit surprised that Angela Merkel has taken a reasonably tough line on this. Well, she's a smart, credible leader, in not just my opinion, but I think global opinion. And having come from the former, what was known formerly as that East Germany, remember that closed East German country before the unification and the Berlin Wall came down, Angela Merkel knows all about Vladimir Putin and his type. And so she's wanting definitely to have sanctions here. And the trouble with sanctions is that they hurt both sides. Appeasement is the easy option. You know, we'd all like Mr. Putin to turn into sort of Mr. Nice Guy, and we say, well, let him have Crimea after all. It's been part of Russia for long enough, hasn't it? So let him have that. But we've seen he's been clipping off bits of other states. We saw that with Georgia. There's a fair amount of muscling, intimidation, use of the energy weapon with other former Soviet Union countries. And fact is that most of these countries want a more democratic form of government, and they want to be more closely allied to the West. Well, that's hardly surprising, given the superior growth rates that the West has shown for so long, and the freedoms, personal freedoms that people actually have. But Putin has other ideas, as you know. And I think this is, I've said it before, you know my view, I've been talking about it all week. You're probably bored of hearing about it, but I think this is a dangerous situation. And I think that unless these sanctions do hurt Russia, there's no guarantee that he'll back down because of that. He could dig in first and cause other problems, such as palladium. It's only one commodity, but palladium very strong in here again today. Good looking chart, incidentally. Extremely interesting. But my feeling is that this is going to rumble on, being a generally lowish key tension factor. But again, I think appeasement and not standing up to Putin would really be much more costly over the next several years than confronting this issue now. So it's an unfortunate situation. It's not good for markets, although not all markets are reflecting this yet, and to a very little extent in Europe so far, and certainly not in the US yet. I mean, the US has been bulletproof, hasn't it, for at least the last couple of quarters in here. Now, you've got some very, very good long-term factors, which I've recommended, or beg your pardon, which I've written about and talked about on so many occasions, not least the huge and increasing technology lead. In an era of accelerating technological innovation, the U.S. is stretching out its lead in a way that very few people, I don't think anybody saw that happening. It was all a matter of how quickly was Asia actually going to take over in terms of what people were saying, and even very smart people like Lee Kuan Yew of Singapore. But those forecasts have proved wrong, and probably a very good thing too. And so the U.S. is in a phenomenal position in terms of its technology. It's also in a phenomenal position in terms of its energy. And I'm talking about the fracking, of course, and that's a U.S. Energy technology invention. And so it's a very, very attractive picture. And if I think, where will the United States stock market be in 10 years' time? Now, nobody knows. We make a guess. But I think, given the technology, given lead, given the virtual self-sufficiency in terms of oil, which can last for a very good long time, Given all the U.S. autonomies, I think Wall Street will be much higher in 10 years' time than it is today. You've also heard me say before in these Friday audios that I think that we will see clear evidence that a very bullish medium to longer term outlook is unfolding, and I think it'll be a secular bull market. I've been talking about this for a couple of years now. But over the next few years, I would expect choppy pullbacks and consolidations. That hasn't happened yet on Wall Street, I know. But I think that there are a number of reasons for thinking that that's going to be happening as we head into the second and third quarter. And partly because, on average, second and third quarter of the year are underperformers relative to the first and fourth quarter of the year, on average. You obviously get exceptions on a year-to-year basis. But that's one small factor. Valuations are another factor that I think could certainly contribute to that. The QE tapering and the fact that people can now see across that distant horizon to a point when US short-term interest rates begin to move higher. So this, what some would describe, at least privately, if not publicly, perfect environment in terms of monetary policy, not too hot, not too cold, all that sort of thing. That's not going to go on forever. That's quite apparent. And Janet Yellen's already put a number on it, as I mentioned earlier on, about 6 months after the QE tapering is completed by autumn. So that will take away much more of the punch bowl. And as short-term interest rates begin to move up, and now again we're talking that's over a year away on current projections. As short-term interest rates begin to move up, then the buyback of shares will become a less attractive option here overall. Will global GDP growth be strong enough to make all of that irrelevant as far as the stock market's concerned? Well, expect some uncertainty before we get there. And that is what I do expect. So I think we're on the higher side of the ranges that we're likely to see over the next couple of years. Although, again, these Wall Street uptrends, I described them as bulletproof earlier on, and that remains the case, but I'm looking ahead. I'm looking ahead, and I don't think they can go a whole lot higher. I'm not looking for a bear market, and I don't regard a 20% correction really as a bear market, although I appreciate that it certainly feels like it at the time. But I do expect this choppy period for the next few years. Now, you can ride that out. If you are in stocks that have a lot of appeal, particularly some of the better performing autonomies, but you know they can be quite volatile here overall. But again, if you have stocks that provide a decent yield, I think you can certainly ride this out if you wish to on a long-term basis and make a few strategic shifts. The main thing to avoid is be careful when something gets way overextended on the upside, and don't panic out when you've seen a 10-15% correction, or even a 20% correction if you ride that down. Don't panic out. It's a buy low, sell high environment, and that's the true most of the time, but certainly in this environment, it's especially true, in my opinion. So what else? Well, some of these beaten up mining markets are looking better, and I talked about Brazil. About time too. but that's looking stronger. And Mexico has picked up here a bit, and the resources sector generally looking somewhat steadier, but held back by the whole China uncertainty. So I think we'll get more base development activity here overall. I'm not looking well. I'd be pleasantly surprised with a big move to the upside, but I think these offer value. I think these offer attractive value is the main point that I would like to make. Now I'm jumping around, so forgive me for that, but this is ex tempo here. You know, I haven't got sheets of notes, which would probably make the delivery even more questionable than it is. But I didn't mention India, and India in among those Asian markets so promising. I think you know why. All I just have to do is to say Narendra Modi. He's going to be the next prime minister, and we will have the voting start next month, and the result will be announced in May. The size of his lead, or the number of seats that he actually has, is important in terms of the most effective governance. But he's smart and he's strong and highly credible, and that, in my opinion, is just what India needs. Governance is everything, is one of the key phrases that we repeat over and over and over here at Fuller Tracy Money, and it certainly applies in the case of India. Okay, now moving on from there, what about these government bond markets? Well, we're in trading ranges. It's a nice stable environment overall, and I think it will continue for a while longer. Central banks would like to see that. Certainly the U.S. would like to see these bond markets go on ranging in terms of their yields, and the ECB would certainly like to see that. We do not have a lot of the statistical inflation problems, although those cost of living increases. I've often said this in the past, that everything that you need to buy on a daily, weekly, or even monthly basis, those costs move up fairly steadily. Then there are things like education, which have gone up hugely. So of course there are plenty of cost increases, but will the numbers that the Fed and other central banks are looking at, are they going to go up a whole lot in the short to near term, medium term, or reasonable medium term, the next few months? Probably not. So I think we get further ranging in these bond markets. But I think before the end of the year, we will see that U.S. 10-year Treasury yield, which is right in the 2.76 level. I think we'll see that push back and sustain a break above 3%. And that will ring a few bells. And remember, the fixed interest sector, the bull market is over. We're in a bear market here now, in the very early stages of a bear market. But these transitions can take quite a long time. They move slowly. But that the long-term outlook is for somewhat higher interest rates as among global bond markets. And certainly when we get back to anything like reasonable GDP growth rates, we're going to see both higher long-term rates and also higher short-term rates as well. So all that lies ahead. Looking at currencies, we've seen the big change in China's policy, going from one of the strongest performing currencies in the world, if not the strongest performing currency, until earlier this month, or the end of last month. We now have a much weaker renminbi, and that's causing some problems among the other Asian currencies, leading to general weakness there. I hope that as growth improves eventually in China and that spills over and helps the region generally, then we'll see their currencies firm up again somewhat. I think that will happen, but I'm also keeping my fingers crossed here in the short term, because China is a very, very big player, and if the government screws up, to put it to use the vulgarism, that'll cause more havoc throughout the region here, quite obviously. I think I don't think we have to worry a great deal about the euro. Again, the ECB doesn't want the euro to strengthen much further. The UK government doesn't want sterling to strengthen much further. So we'll get a lot of fairly narrow ranges among these currencies generally, and occasionally one or two of them break out and move quite sharply, as we've seen. I think that commodities are going to be important here overall, and we've had that big rise in the agricultural commodity prices. That's due to poor growing conditions starting in the South American region. It's due to some extreme weather conditions, such of all that cold weather that the western plains of the United States have seen, also due to the severe drought that California has seen, droughts in other areas, and floods in the UK and other parts of Europe. So this is an inauspicious start to 2014 in terms of agricultural commodities, and food prices are definitely going up, and that is going to cause some pickup in inflation figures. That's a little bit of a headwind for households, quite clearly. Industrial metals, well, they're basically ranging, but they're ranging in a support building phase, I feel. And what we're seeing is that miners have cut back on production. They're trying to cut costs. That's reducing supply. Demand will eventually pick up. It's the way these markets always bottom out. So a year from now, will industrial metal prices be higher or lower? I would say almost certainly higher. Over the next longer term, will they be higher or lower? I would say probably somewhat higher. I hesitated a little bit on that because I think some of these new drilling techniques that Owen has been writing about in particular recently and this week, including this week, will make mining a more efficient process. That's good for the miners, but it might, because it lowers their costs and can increase productivity. And it's progress, again, technological breakthrough coming from South Africa. But it will possibly lead to, well, it'll reduce the risk of shortages more often than not. You get exceptions to that. I think I mentioned the palladium earlier on. If Russia holds back supplies as part of the tit for tat in these sanctions, then of course the price can go up quite sharply as a consequence of that shortage. But I feel that the commodity bear market phase is over, and really what it was just a big lengthy medium term correction of over 2 years. Now those markets are picking up, led by the agricultural commodities, where supply is the key variable. But so, how's this all play out, and how does it look here in terms of the longer term? I think that the world is going to continue its sort of fits and starts recovery following that long valuation contraction cycle. The uncertainties, I think, are probably going to be greater over the medium term, as in the next few years, than over the longer term. But I'm really overall reasonably optimistic about the next few years. I don't see too many disasters. There are wild card situations, such as what we're seeing with Putin in Russia, and that's they're concerns, but there are always concerns, provided that doesn't go out of control. Then and I don't think it will, and I certainly hope it doesn't. Then we don't have a bad environment here overall. So we've had plenty of terrified investors over the last few years. That's not been my view, and as you've noticed, I haven't sold any shares in here throughout this whole bull market recovery phase and counting. I put on some hedge shorts from time to time, which have not worked out particularly well. It's a tactic I will defend, although I would never remotely try to fully hedge my overall equity portfolio. But the point I'm trying to make here is that I think it's going to be a choppy but not a bad overall environment. It's a buy low, sell high environment, and I think if you get caught in a sharp downward move, don't lose your nerve. Your markets are volatile; they're very emotional. If everybody's turning bearish, it's probably close to a buying opportunity. Conversely, when you get the euphoria, with those extremes in investor sentiment, they're always contrary indicators, and I think we've had too much optimism on Wall Street overall, as I said before. But bottom line, it's not all that bad an environment here over the next few years, and then I see plenty of reasons, starting with cheaper energy prices. Solar is going to come on gangbusters. The take-up rate in terms of capture, those solar panels. I mean, that's really moving up into the 40, 45 percent level, and I would say that 5 years from now, certainly 10 years from now, and probably 5 years from now, that capture rate's going to be up to, 80, 85%, and at that stage, it will make profound good sense for every household to have a very efficient solar panel on their roof, and ditto for every business. So solar power, that's the one green renewable that's just going to really take off. A lot of countries have stupidly lumbered themselves with windmills. That's a problem. I think new nuclear will make positive contributions to energy. I think fracking. And the only good side of this Russian thing that's taking place here with Vladimir Putin is that it's a wake-up call for Europe. Get out there and get fracking, guys, and reconsider some of the new nuclear plants, which you could certainly use. And that would get energy prices lower overall. So accelerating rate of technological innovation and lower energy prices on a worldwide basis. A big growing middle class, that's a recipe for a secular bull market. And on that note, I will end this, but just to repeat the point, I am taking my first holiday in at least a year. next week. So I wish you well, and I will look forward to resuming my copy and speaking to you when I get back. Meanwhile, all the very best to all of you.